Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buccanani. Chris, it's Super Bowl week.
Fly, Eagles, fly on the road to victory.
I guess you just let our listeners know where your feelings are for the Super Bowl. You and I, both Eagles fans, looking forward to it. Care to give an early prediction for the game?
I do not, but thank you for the opportunity.
You know, let me ask you this, though, and we obviously were talking to a Penn State audience, and how much does having Saquon Barkley on the team kind of advance or enhance your fandom?
I don't know that it's possible at this point. I've hit my saturation level with Eagles fandom. I can't be more of an Eagles fan than I already am at this point, but it's been awesome. This has been so fun to enjoy this season as a Penn State and Eagles fan. And from everything I have heard about Saquon Barkley, and I know a number of people who know him personally, they all say the same thing universally, that he is as he appears to be. He is as good a person as he is a football player, which is exceptionally rare to have that amount of talent and to also have like some humility and some personality about you. So it's just great. As a Philly fan, but as a Nittany Lion, as a Penn Stater, man, this has been really satisfying, and it's great for the program. This is great PR for the Penn State football program, for James Franklin, for our ability to develop running backs and develop NFL talent. I mean, it's really been a boon for, I think, just the brand of Penn State in the football world.
Well, I'm an Eagles fan also, but I'll admit I'm a bit of a fair weather fan. There's not that same loyalty like I have to Penn State.
There is a part of me that's very envious of that, Jim.
Well, I don't know if it should be envious, but it's the reality of it. I lived for about 20 years in Philadelphia. You've got to pick up the Eagles while you're there. I did. I enjoy it. But if they're not playing well, I'm not a big enough NFL fan that, oh, come hell or high water, I'll be there every week.
Yeah.
Having a good season, yes. And I'll also say that there's been so many Penn State players, obviously, in the NFL. Candidly, that's never even moved me also, you know, to see, oh, I want to see this team play because a Penn Stater's there. For some reason, you combine, though, the Eagles – with Saquon Barkley. And I think part of it, and you and I, we discussed this before the season started. We were both thrilled about Saquon Barkley going to the Eagles, thought it was a magical fit. And I think it's just also, isn't it wonderful to be right that we predicted he would do so well with this kind of offensive line?
For sure. For sure. And you've got Saquon Barkley, Jahan Dotson, Tariq Castro-Fields on the Eagles practice squad. Three Nittany Lions going to get rings if the Eagles can get this one. So fly, Eagles, fly, baby. Go, Browns.
All right. Very good. Can't wait for the game. I'm more excited for this Super Bowl than I can recall ever for a Super Bowl. All right, Chris, let's switch back to where we're supposed to be. Let's talk about Penn State football. And as an Eagles fan, you're very happy about the Eagles season, where they are. I got to think that following Penn State, too, you got to feel a similar way. It feels like everything is coming up Nittany Lions right now. Players returning, went out to get the defensive coordinator that's considered one of, if not the best in the country, stealing him away from a rival. Plus, you feel like there's something going on here. Did you picture Penn State being the team that would be the breakthrough on compensation for a defensive coordinator? It feels like everything happening like this, we're hitting a seminal moment in Penn State's football program. Agreed?
Agreed. And in answer to your question of could I have anticipated it, actually, probably yes, because I think if you've been reading the tea leaves of just the way things have moved at Penn State once Pat Kraft took over the AD position, I think you could see the possibility for this on the horizon. So I was not surprised at all, really. When we went out and spent the money that we did to get Andy Kotelnicki last offseason, and now that we're in the situation where we are and the ante continues to be upped, that we're willing to put our money where our mouth is in bringing Jim Knowles over from Ohio State.
I've talked to some Penn State fans, or maybe I'll say Penn State fans have talked to me. They've sent in their feelings on it. And I get the feeling some of the fans always felt, you know what, Penn State is not a win-at-all-costs kind of program. It's success with honor. Can you explain to them why this is not a conflict of that?
Sure. That's a really good question. I'm thinking through how I want to answer it, because I think I'll start by saying this. Their concerns are certainly valid. That's a reasonable criticism, and it's probably a little bit too early to tell whether or not they're right, but I can envision a reasonable path that terminates with the people who feel that way right now being proven correct. I guess my initial reaction is that the reason why Penn State fans, so many of us, just really have such a reverence and appreciation for what Joe Paterno did as our head coach is because that guy was one of one. Very special to be able to do what he did in the way he did it for the length of time that he did it. And that he was the sort of person who would lecture the trustees about lackluster investment in academic standards after a national championship, or turn down a 3% share of the New England Patriots to stay in Happy Valley. I mean, that's a unique personality. And unique means there aren't any more of them. So you have them while you have them, and then it's gone. And I talked about this. I can't remember what was with you earlier or one of the other venues where I'm on the air. But if you look at where the expectations were for Penn State football and the national perception of the program, where that was when Joe took over the job, and then you look at the tier Penn State occupied when Bill O'Brien took the job, they were two completely different universes. And everywhere else, Jim, everywhere else in the sport of college football, to consistently succeed at the level to which Penn State fans, boosters, alumni, you name it, had become accustomed, had a really high price tag on it. And because of that uniqueness of Joe Pa, all the way right up through the end, I mean, it is to me just remarkable that we had this septuagenarian, octogenarian coach still competing at a level with head coach is half his age. And then, you know, when you finally got the look under the hood, you're like, man, there's a cracked engine block in this thing. You know, we were spending half of what our peers were spending, and we were still managing to win. It's miraculous. It's one of the undertold stories of the Nittany Valley, probably. But again, that was the force of will and the ability of a guy who is rightfully regarded as one of the greatest to ever do it. And once that's gone, you went from 1966 to the space age, okay? And in order to continue winning at the level where we want to be, we can still maintain the standards of the program. And I, as I've said many times, I believe James Franklin has done a commendable job of that, and as well as anyone could reasonably expect of anybody who could come take this job to succeed the legacy of Joe Pa. But it's just going to cost more. It just is. The idea that you're going to find someone else with the unique collection of character traits and coaching ability and keenness of mind and strength of will to step in here and produce the same results as everybody else all around the country for nickels on the dollar, is crazy. And frankly, we should all kind of hope that that's not the case, because if we could just replace one Joe Paterno with another one, maybe it means that he's really not all that special anyway. So that's my take on it.
Well, there also seems to have been early on with the NIL factor. Penn State fans were very slow to get there with it. It felt, I think for Penn State fans, for so many years, they connected payment to players with the cheating.
There was no question elsewhere. Yeah.
We don't play the game that way. We do it differently here. And I think there was that feeling that NIL was still cheating. But do you get the feeling that that mindset is changing with the fan base?
Yeah, definitely. And it was, you know, look, there were a number of factors that contributed to Penn State's slow start in NIL, but the one you've mentioned is a big one. And that was just going to be an acclimation period over time, because I think it's important to remember that the majority of fans, the vast majority of fans, Jim, aren't paying even a fraction of the attention to this that you and I are. And so this information and how to process it needs to trickle down slowly. That's a years-long process. And frankly, if you're somebody who is successful enough to have the wealth to be able to make program-changing NIL investments, you got a lot of other things on your mind other than, you know, why the world of college football suddenly shifted and everybody's going to be paying football players. So, yeah, I think it's just one of those things that it took a little time, but the shift is real. There's no question.
And you have to do this to compete. And I can't help myself but bring up something I'm sure I've talked about on the air before, not sure if it was with you, Chris, is the SMU example. To get to the ACC, they had to say, we will take no money at all from the conference, which is absolutely incredible, Chris.
Yeah,
The statement made by the guy who's leading the charges, well, so it's $200 million. Big deal.
Yeah, we'll just say, Jim, there were parts of the country and certain programs competing at the highest level where the notion of players being paid was less unfamiliar than it is around these parts. So
that's a nice way to put it, less unfamiliar. And you know what? You see what SMU did with their strategy. They made it to the ACC Conference Championship. They made it to the college football playoffs. That's the success story, Chris. When we get back, we're going to talk more about Penn State and how it's running its program. Stay tuned for that. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Chris Buchanani. It's quarter number two of our show. And Chris, we're talking about what's going on at Penn State. A lot of momentum, a lot of enthusiasm for next year, a lot of things going their way. Everything's coming up Penn State. You have so many players coming back. You bring in Jim Knowles from Ohio State, considered one of the best defensive coordinators. You pay the money necessary to bring them here. You get the excitement of a renovated stadium also. And I think as we get closer to opening day, there'll be more excitement about it and the changes that are going on there.
And one thing about that, Jim, that I think is going to be interesting is I think it's always fun in a sport where so much of what makes it great is history, tradition, collective memory. Anytime you can inject a little uniqueness into it. And so this is going to be a unique version of Beaver Stadium that we experience just for this one season, because some of the structures are going to be temporary. So we've got, you know, the historic home of Penn State football and what we are all hoping is going to be a season for the ages. And we're going to get an iteration of Beaver Stadium that will exist only for that 1 year. And then we'll move on and it'll be different again.
Well, and if you're old enough to remember some of the other changes that were made, Chris, it's pretty exciting. And maybe I'm just one of those people. I love the history of the stadium, but there were the times where, you know, you're adding the club seats and the upper deck first in the south end zone, in the north end zone. And going back even further, in the early 80s, when they used to have the running track around the field, and they got rid of the track and wanted to expand the stadium, but they wanted to get seats closer to the field. And the way they did that is they literally elevated the stadium and put seats in underneath, which to me is an incredible piece of the Beaver Stadium history that I don't think many people are aware of, or at least the young folks aren't.
Yeah, I am familiar with that story, and I am reminded of the saying that ignorance is bliss, because as somebody who doesn't really understand, construction or architecture, every time I hear some of these stories about how Beaver Stadium is held together, I think about how high up I've been in some of those bleachers during games, including when the stadium's shaking pretty good during Zombie Nation. And I think, you know what? The less I know about this, the better, actually.
Well, I'll tell you what. I was that first game, that game against Ohio State. Remember the big sack at the end of the game to put the game away?
Of course.
I was fortunate enough to be in one of the suites for that. The suites were moving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they were swaying.
I was telling that story not too long ago. I think it was on the last obligatory of the season. And I was up in the press box for that. And I'll never forget the stadium shaking. You could feel it. You could see it moving. And because that press box, which is now defunct, RIP, the old gray battleship, that thing was just, solid metal. It didn't just feel like you were inside a battleship. It was that way because it was built that way. There was a barely perceptible tone in the air from the vibrating metal. It was like you could feel it in the air, the electricity and all of it. It was pretty cool.
It was. And yes, to feel this moving and swaying, a little bit scary. And of course, engineers then came out and told us, you know what? That's what it's supposed to do. You don't want it stiff and brittle and breakable.
Sure. Right.
It needs to be able to move a little bit, just like any high-rise buildings actually move a bit. So that was actually a good thing, not a bad thing. So you're right. And I hadn't looked at it from that perspective, Chris, that we were going to have a 1 year kind of situation here, and take the time to enjoy it. You know, that's, and what I'm hopeful, Chris, is that they complete everything they're supposed to. Because I remember, again, I was actually in school.
Me too. I think everybody's hoping that, especially the people who have tickets in those sections that are getting renovated.
Yeah, fingers crossed on that, because September's going to get here pretty quickly, and it's not like you got a couple extra weeks of away games for those first couple games. So keep your fingers crossed that it'll all go well. But where I was headed with this question as we started was, so many of these things seem to be coming up to Penn State's way. I believe in inertia. Things get in motion, they keep going that way. And right now, things are going James Franklin and the program's way. What was it that started this? What made it happen?
Mm-hmm. Let's think back to all the conversations we were having, and not just you and me, but definitely you and me. When I say we, I'm talking about everybody in the fan base and specifically in the media covering the team. What were we all talking about last summer heading into the season? What defines success for Penn State in 2024? And I think there was general consensus that, you know, again, going back to people aren't paying that much attention. They're not really thinking through all of the details. I understand it's an expanded field. So it's easier to get it into a 12-team playoff than a 4-team playoff. For the majority of people, again, I assume the vast majority, it's an AB binary. Did you make the playoffs or did you not? I don't care if it's easier. I don't care about the format. I don't even want to think about the format. I know who's in the playoffs and I know who's not. And I know that for 10 years they've been doing playoffs. And at the end of every regular season, the answer to is Penn State in that playoff was no. So get to the end of the season and give me a yes. And I do really think it might be that simple. I think, again, for most people, the question was, can James Franklin demonstrate more progress? And I think, again, if you're watching and looking back, there's been plenty of that over the last decade. But can he get me to a yes on the question of, are you in the playoffs? And I think that was a big, big part of it. And then I think you just throw in that once they got there, yeah, the Orange Bowl left a bitter taste in everyone's mouths. But you did get two games that people are going to talk about for a long, long time. If you got to be in the stadium for that SMU game, you're never going to forget it. That Tony Rojas pick six is going to be in all the highlight reels for the next 20 years. And so when you pair that up with what was, a very likable team that was fun to root for, with a lot of standout performances, some from guys who are moving on, like Tyler Warren and Abdul Carter. We will never forget the seasons that they had in their last go around in the blue and white. But then so many other players who are now going to come back and give us one more fall. I think you combine all of those things together. But for me, it all starts with you go from no to yes on did you get your team to the college football playoff?
That's a good way to put it. And, you know, a lot of folks, the anti-James Franklin folks, will always say he still hasn't won a big game. But and I like you have mentioned this often, Chris, and I really agree with it. James Franklin has shown improvement over the years. The knock on him a few years ago wasn't that he couldn't win the big game. It was he'd always find a way to lose a game that he shouldn't.
Yeah, that was a valid criticism for a long time.
It was. That's what was keeping him out of the playoffs. Well, guess what? That didn't happen this year, and there were multiple opportunities for it.
Yes.
There was at Wisconsin. There was at USC. And even the game against Bowling Green, and don't tell me that wasn't a losable game. Go tell that to Notre Dame with Northern Illinois.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right? It was a one-score game, and they were kicking an onside kick, so of course it was.
So they found ways to win those games, and if you can just appreciate those as a fan, finding ways to win those games, it was a memorable season. Then, as you said, if you were there, you talked about this coming season being history because the stadium will be in a state that it will only be for 1 year. Well, guess what, Chris? Only one time will you have an opportunity to be there for the first ever playoff game and playoff win in Beaver Stadium.
Yeah.
It was cold, which only made it more memorable.
Yes. The first playoff game, the first playoff win, and the last game in Beaver Stadium in the evolved version that dates back to 1960.
Exactly. And you and I talked about this before that game, that there was a fear that we'd see a stadium that was only half or three quarters of the way filled, that a lot of fans wouldn't be there. And I believe you even pleaded with people to show up. And, you know, credit to the fans, they did show up, Chris, okay? Yes. It was an excellent crowd, by the way.
I have gotten feedback that I directly through this show and obligatory bullwhipped at least half a dozen people. So, Pat, you're welcome, no charge.
I suspect it was more than a half dozen people who were there because of the Chris Buchanan factor.
Absolutely. And I'll take it. I'll take that credit.
And this is where, you know, circling back again to the original question of what got the momentum here, I feel like Chris, you know, and I don't think James Franklin gets enough credit for what he does to get the program here, get the momentum. So it's like I hear people say, oh, well, these players, they're all coming back only because they're paid. Well, guess what? They could still go somewhere else and get paid. maybe get also, paid even
I
more.
I hate when people say that. When Bill O'Brien renegotiated his contract after the 2012 season, there was a columnist out in Pittsburgh who wrote that he showed that really all he cares about is money. And, you know, I hear the same thing, like, oh, these guys are only coming back because they're getting paid. And I was like, do you do your job for free? Like, if your boss came to you and said, like, hey, you're doing a great job, but I was thinking about, hey, maybe you just do this for free. Like, what would your reaction be?
Exactly. So, being compensated is part of everyday life and where you choose. If you switch jobs, I'm willing to bet the vast majority, not the majority, the vast majority leave for more money.
Sure.
But the other part to this, Chris, is I still believe a lot of these players could have probably gotten more money if they put themselves on the open market.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
So it's not it, which is, and we won't have time for it. I'll ask you about it when we come back. But I saw someone recommend Jeremiah Smith from Ohio State, the best player in football. He should just declare himself a free agent, even if he wants to come back to Ohio State. Test the market, find out what his market value is, and then come back to Ohio State and say, hey, here's the number you got to match. We'll talk about that, Chris, when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buchanani. It's quarter number three of our show. Chris, as we were finishing up quarter number two, I was talking about the example of Jeremiah Smith from Ohio State, the best player returning to college football, correct?
Yeah, that's probably fair. Here's rationale for that. I heard several NFL scouts quoted as saying that if Jeremiah Smith were draft eligible this year, he would be pretty clearly the consensus number one overall pick. Now, again, like setting aside the fact that teams always want to trade up and take a quarterback because they stink and they need a quarterback, just in terms of who is valued highest, it'd be Jeremiah Smith. So if that guy would be number one in his draft class this year, you have to think he's the top returning talent for next year.
Exactly. So, you know, the advice someone gave to him was, hey, go out and be, you know, declare yourself the free agent and find out what the market will bear. Now, yeah, we all know with tampering and all that, he didn't need to do that. He could have found out what he was worth.
Right.
But, you know, far be it for me to ever give credit to a Buckeye. But no doubt Jeremiah Smith is making money at Ohio State, but he's leaving money on the table. So in my mind, hey, good for him. Good for the program, the loyalty and sticking around. And I think, Chris, we could say the same thing about these players, Drew Allard, Nick Singleton, Denai Dennis Sutton. I suspect they could have put themselves out as free agents and found more money also. So I'm with you. Throw away that whole argument about, oh, they're only back for money, Chris.
Yeah, the money is now part of the sport. That's just the way it is. Kind of going back to your question earlier about does paying a defensive coordinator somehow compromise the notion of success with honor? I just don't think that it has to. And it's just sort of, you know, you and I, Jim, we're market-based thinkers, and this is what the market will bear right now. It's not what you're paying any of these folks who are involved with the enterprise, right? The coaches, the staff, the players, It's what they do as Penn Staters. Do they carry themselves in a way that makes you proud to be an alum or a fan or someone who follows the program? So I think that, and I've said this often, this staff has done, I think, about as good a job as you can realistically hope to bring in talented players who care about playing college football at Penn State versus just college football in general. And so when you have a strong program culture and when you have a place that people want to be and a program they want to be a part of, then yeah, as long as they feel like they're in the reasonable ballpark of being fairly compensated for their talent, they may not be quick to just go jump at the highest dollar figure.
And I think the numbers bear that out. If you look at the number of Penn State players who leave through the portal and how many come in through the portal, it's not many when you compare them with their peers.
And Jim, didn't we say right around this time last year when King Mack left for Alabama that he felt like the first potential impact player who we'd lost through the portal? And now here we are 12 months later and he's back in the blue and white.
Corrected the one scenario.
I mean, not for nothing. To me, that is a really important point. Like, if I were to show fans the list of players who have departed Penn State through the transfer portal since it was instituted, 80% of those names would be players the average fans never even heard of. And none of them, other than maybe somebody who would look at the numbers Keandre Lambert-Smith put up at Auburn this past fall, and I could give you a bunch of reasons why there are asterisks on that, none of them would be players somebody looked at and thought, boy, I'm real sorry we lost that guy, right? Penn State's not losing impact talent through the transfer portal. And the one player who we all thought, like, they finally got us. Somebody finally poached the talent off our roster. That guy was gone for a year, and then he came back.
What does that tell you?
Exactly.
And I think the guys that people do know the names, Bo Prabula, he found out he was not going to be starting here next year, which was his plan all along. It was Drew Aller's plan, I'm sure, to move on to the NFL at this point. And, you know, so I have no I'm not upset with any of the players who left, because I felt like they all left for the right reason. King Mack, again, you hit it. He was the one exception to all this, and here he is back. So anyway, Chris, let's get to this team and talk about the team that they're going to put forth on the field. But first, it starts with James Franklin. You said a year ago, and this team, it was binary. Make the playoffs or not, right? They made the playoffs. So what is that binary now? What is they accomplished it or they didn't? What do they have to accomplish this season for it to be the good season?
Great question. I got into a conversation online on Twitter, or X, if y'all prefer, with between Zach Seiko, who hosts Locked On Nittany Lions, and Zaki Wheatley Sr., I think, Zaki Wheatley's dad, about the expectations around the team going into this season. By the way, shout out to Zaki's dad. Like, Twitter is not a platform for intelligent discourse, as he and I have both lamented, but it is possible to find it. You just have to look. And I really appreciate the just the level of conversations he brings when he gets involved with, you know, fans or media who are discussing the team. So we were talking about what are the expectations. And it had started with him pushing back on, I think Zach's phrase was national championship or bust for Penn State. And I said, you know, there's always a conversation, a chicken and the egg conversation about, is the media reflecting the reality of fan expectations, or are we creating it by saying stuff like that? And then it gets repeated back to us and it becomes a feedback loop. As near as I can tell, Jim, if I am trying to take the pulse of the fan base based on just my own social circles and the people I talk to here in town and the discourse I see online, if you ask me what's the binary for success this season, I do think it's an appearance in the national championship game. Now, again, it's February. So one thing I said when Noble and I were talking about the hiring of Jim Knowles is that for whatever, the next 7 months, the only version of this team that exists is the perfect and most idealized version that's in between our ears. So enjoy it while we got it. Because once they kick it off, then you just got to take whatever cards reality deals you. But right now, we can just imagine the best case scenario. So I think just in that vein, the standard is you got to get to the championship game and at least play for a title with this team. Now, as you get closer and closer to January and all the details and particulars come into focus, you know, hey, maybe Penn State has a really difficult path and maybe they, you know, they beat a great program in the quarterfinals and they get to the semis and they're just up against like another great blue blood legacy team. They don't quite get it done. The particulars of it may leave everybody feeling, you know, kind of like they did this season, disappointed about what could have been, but also bullish about what's to come. But I think right now, my sense of it is that the expectation is that they need to play for a national championship this year. Just again, to the point of so many talents coming back for one last rodeo.
I'm going to take a little different angle on it, Chris, because I think please. The playoffs, it is a bit of a crapshoot. You know, what are you going to get? How are you lined up? Think about this, what Ohio State went through. And I'm just beginning to realize I'm talking about Ohio State a lot. People might think I'm a closet Buckeye fan as much as I've been talking about them. But look at their schedule and who they had to beat in the playoffs.
Yeah,
they had a four-game run where they beat Tennessee, Oregon, Texas, and Notre Dame. That's a gauntlet of four top 10 teams. If they did that in the regular season or just had those four teams scheduled in a row, you'd say that's incredible that they went through and won all four of those games. My point being that you could go into the playoffs and hit something like that and have a loss in there. And I don't, yes, of course, it'll be a disappointment, but I don't think it's necessarily that you let the fan base down. It was a bad season.
Jim, if they would have lost literally any of those games, probably Ryan Day would have been fired. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, a unique, very unique situation. But Ryan Day put himself in that situation with his loss to Michigan during the regular season, okay? If he would have been looked at differently going into the playoffs if he had beaten this 500 team called Michigan at home, okay?
Sure, but again, don't lose sight of the fact that we entered the year with the understanding that Ohio State had pushed most, if not all, the chips to the center of the table, you know, to the tune of $20-plus million. And there were expectations of, okay, you asked for the investment and we made it. Now, where's the return?
Right. Now, I think there's the feeling, and it may not be the exact same amount of money, but I think the feeling is Penn State has pushed their chips in for this coming
season.
That's
exactly my point.
But I think where they need to change, Ohio State could go into this season, lose two games again, and everyone will say, well, hey, they won a national championship last year, losing two games. We'll see you in the playoffs. I don't think Penn State has earned that right yet. I think Penn State has to beat either Oregon or Ohio State in the regular season to change the perception of the team. Because if they go 10-2, lose those two games, the only way they could make up for it then is a national championship. But I think if they manage to go 11-1 during the regular season, it will change that perception of they absolutely can't win a big game.
Yeah, I know we're coming up against the break, and that's a very good point. Let me just say I'll buy it, and we can talk about it more on the other side. I'll let you take us out.
Yep, let's do that because I want to talk about that. And I just feel like that Oregon game, and, you know, credit or blame to the schedulers putting Oregon as Penn State's first Big Ten game of the season. That is going to be, in my mind, Chris, absolutely huge for James Franklin and Drew Aller. We'll get your reaction when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Chris. I'm Jim. Chris, I kind of cut you off, or I didn't give you much time to respond, and I'm putting it out there one more time. What I believe the perception of Penn State football will be going into this season. I think, and I'll put out three teams, Oregon, Ohio State, and Penn State. A year ago, regular season, Oregon undefeated, Ohio State two losses, Penn State one loss. Here's what I believe the perception to be. Oregon during the regular season, whether they go 12-0, 11-1, 10-2, they just have to make the playoffs. Going undefeated in the regular season next year, I would think the Oregon fans are saying, we saw that last year, and where did it get us? Ohio State, I think they've got the same thing. The margin, because they won the national championship with two losses. Yes, they better beat Michigan. But other than that, they go 10-2 and get into the playoffs. Ohio State fans are going to say, we got you right where we want you, just like it was last season. I believe Penn State is the only one of the three who has all the pressure in the world on the regular season, because the knock isn't that Penn State made it to the national semifinals. The knock is they still didn't beat a name program. I believe they have to have a regular season where they beat an Oregon or an Ohio State. Your response to that?
Yeah, well, where you're situated on the timeline definitely impacts that, because if we are in February of 2026 and we're talking about national champion Penn State that went 10-2 in the regular season, absolutely no one will care, right?
Right.
That said, if they enter the playoffs at 10-2 and those two losses are Oregon and Ohio State, you're absolutely correct that the only way to redeem any value from that season in the eyes of a lot of fans, I think, is going to be to run the table for precisely the reasons you just said. And as a result, there will be an incredible amount of pressure on coach and team to do so. You really have me thinking about the fact that coming into this past season, kind of to go all the way back to where we started the conversation at the top of the show, and how would you define success for 2024? One of the other things I said was we've never won 11 games in a regular season. And so we did that last year, but the schedule shook out in such a way that you could do that and still not get national credit for having secured a big win. You talked about the circumstances of scheduling that sees Oregon come to Happy Valley in the fourth game of the season for Penn State. I think that's good. I like the idea of having the test early. And the other thing I like about it, Jim, is it also reduces the possibility that we're going to get stuck in a situation like we did going to USC last season, where the team finds some way to screw up their ranking and deprives us of a chance to take credit for the win. You know, I know I keep banging this drum, but people forget that USC was going to be a top 10 team if they could have beaten Minnesota the week before we played, and instead they dropped completely out of the rankings. And so we got virtually no credit for that win all the way through the rest of the season. We can feel relatively confident that Penn State is going to get a test against a top five opponent, and we're going to get them in our building. And yeah, at some point or another, you got to win one of those games. And I think the much easier, relatively speaking, now win to get will be in your building against an Oregon team you went blow for blow with in the Big Ten championship game the previous season versus Ohio State, the team you've just been cursed, jinxed against in the horseshoe where Penn State practically never wins since we joined the Big Ten. And so how much does that transform things and create momentum and expand margin for error, frankly, if you can get that win against Oregon early? So I think you raise a good point about the need to get over the big game hump if you're going to get to another 11-win regular season because of the way the schedule shakes out. And to me, I think it's aligned favorably to get Oregon early.
Yeah, and Penn State's not going to lose an out-of-conference game. Is there a loss in here for Oregon? They play Oregon State. They play Oklahoma State. They play Northwestern. And I'm looking at the Big Ten schedule, and there's a logo for another one of their games. And, Chris, I cannot identify the logo, who that is. So do you see Oregon losing one of those games before they head to Happy Valley?
I don't. No matter what they end up doing with the quarterback position, and I mean, I would think if I'm an Oregon fan, I am really hoping that they're going to commit to Dante Moore, because if they believe he's the talent many people say he is, I think at one point or another, you got to get off this. We're going to bring in a free agent quarterback every single year. They expended some resources to flip him over from UCLA after his freshman year. I think you've just got to, you know, accept that the way you're recruiting, you're trying to build a long-term contender, and that will require putting a really talented quarterback in a position where he can get reps.
And Chris,
just to say that I think going beyond the fact that they're breaking in a new quarterback, I don't know that it's unreasonable to suggest that the talent level across the board for the Ducks this coming season might not even be a little bit higher overall than it was this past year, just because they're recruiting so well. They do very well in the transfer portal. And what we saw from Penn State this past year, the lesson we learned is that depth, especially as they increase the number of games in a season, is one of the big determining factors in where you can be in the overall picture in college football. So yeah, there are some brand names on there that you don't want to just, you know, consider layups, but I don't think they lose any of those games.
I don't think so either, Chris. And I'm going to look at it, the perspective you put it at for a team, it's probably a good setup. I'm going to look at this from a fan perspective. Early game in September, we're going to see on the home field two top five teams, right?
Yeah.
How often do you get to see that in a regular season game?
I mean, you can only think of a very small handful of times in your lifetime that has happened for Penn State. And now we're going to have it in two consecutive seasons.
It's a bucket list kind of game. It's something that will create excitement in the fan base. That's what you want as a fan. So you're not going to, by the way,
have that gnawing fear that comes with facing Ohio State at this point because of the long losing streak.
Right. Well, let's get to the point then. How do you feel? I won't say specifically. I'm not making you make a prediction about, you know, Penn State, Oregon, but how do you feel about this team? What's your confidence level when they're going to have to face a game like this? We know so many of the players came back, Chris. We know the issues at wide receiver. We know the players who are coming back. How do you feel about that going into this season and, you know, a Big Ten schedule that has an Oregon in the front end and Ohio State down the road?
Extremely bullish. I am very excited for this team. I am positive, very positive for Penn State football in 2025. And going back to something I said earlier, to me, it just matters so much to have a team that you enjoy rooting for, because you feel like you know some things about the players and you're looking forward to watching them play. There are so many guys on this team who are known commodities that I can't wait for August to get here. So we can be getting ready to talk about watching these guys play. And then there are a number of kids who haven't gotten on the field yet, who I'm also excited to see get their first opportunity to step up and contribute more. So, yeah, I feel great. I really do.
I'm glad that's your answer, because I feel the same way. And as much as it's Drew Aller coming back and Nick Singleton coming back and Denai Dennis Sutton coming back, you've got stars coming back. I think I'm most excited about, Chris, the offensive line and what they have coming back with that.
You and me, I was just, it's funny you should say that. I was just thinking, man, I didn't mention how excited I am for the O-line, which is probably my number one thing I'm excited about. Yeah, yeah.
They're good. They're deep. They finished strong at the end of last season. To me, and that means so much to both parts of the offense, both the running game, the passing game. You know, as big a fan as there is of Tyler Warren, I'm still excited about the tight ends that are coming up.
Sure.
Unfortunately, I still got to talk about the wide receivers, though, Chris. That seems it's still the one Achilles heel. Where are you with them? Let me start with this. They lost their two best performing wide receivers from last year. Yeah. Trey Wallace, Amari Evans hit the portal. Happy about that because it's just a complete cleaning house of starting over again? Or is this just we're going to have more of the same another year?
Well, I'm not ready to commit to saying I believe we're not going to have more of the same. I think that's possible. But to your point about losing those guys, my view of it is that I think it was mutually beneficial for player and program to have a parting of the ways, just because I feel like, you know, just sometimes you come to the point in life where a relationship is at its end, and that's where we were with Trey Wallace and Amari Evans. So no, I don't lament those losses, and that's not necessarily any reflection on those guys. I think it's better for them and probably better for Penn State.
I'm with you on that, because I feel like now players entering the portal or not, and even players who are choosing to stay and not go into the draft, it's a two-sided decision. It's not just the player saying, I want to stay. It's also about the program saying, we want you here.
Yeah, and I think, kind of like I said with Keandre Lambert-Smith, I think Jed Fish is going to find ways to use Omari Evans' skill set in Washington's offense. I won't be shocked at all if Harrison Wallace has a great season with Ole Miss. I'm not going to look at either one of those situations and say, okay, what they're doing right now and with their new teams is directly projectable to what they would have done at Penn State if they stayed, because I just don't believe that to be the case at all.
We going to have to see another portal entry in the spring phase?
I think that's likely. I am sure. In fact, I know they're going out and they're looking very aggressively. That said, at one point or another, Jim, we keep saying it. Law of averages says one of these young receivers we've actually recruited has to break through. I mean, whether it's Tysier Denmark or one of the even younger guys, at one point or another, one of them has to be good, right? Just one. I've been saying the same thing for three damn years.
Chris, two running backs, three tight ends on the field at the same time. There is the creative solution, Chris.
Let's do it.
All right. That is it for our show. Chris, thank you. Thank all of you for listening. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Go Birds!
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7, and Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.